reach out to communities and like building broader power and trying to think through like how we can bring in folks who might be on different opposite, or, like different sides of the spectrum together to have these crucial conversations and figure out how, you know, we can create the world that we need together. And so that's kind of a question I have. And then I guess to your point about like being alone in white organizing spaces, that's been me in my job for the past 10 months. And I'm lucky to be going into another NGO doing more organizing, but this time is more environmental justice, prioritizing the leadership of Black and working folks in the Pittsburgh area. So very excited about that. But just like, I was curious to know about like your experiences with wanting to increase the diversity and diverse leadership of your organizing spaces while have you encountered like any tokenizing aspects in doing that? Because I have, and just thinking through like how you negotiate that.
Just sort of following up on that, I guess. My name is Raul Cabreras. I teach Latino Studies at Indiana University Northwest. I'm a Chicano, and I actually teach it through Chicano Studies. And what it links up is like what you brought up, that there's actually, I'm I'm trying to do something that I can't. I now teach courses on the Anthropocene, on global climate change through Chicano Studies. This is a Chicano Studies course that people come, they're going to listen to. They think they sign up for a class on Latino culture and society, and then they hear a class about the Anthropocene. but it's related. It is. What I talk is that Chicano Studies is a worldview. It's not a study of Chicanos. It's a study, it's a worldview, the Chicano worldview, and this is obviously something central in the world. My point to try and bring out is that maybe, you know, you should check into that in terms of you trying to build resources through the university. There is a tradition about environmental justice in the ethnic studies program. So Robert Bullard is a papa of environmental justice, you know, and he teaches through a African American studies program. Obviously not the University of Minnesota, but I'm saying that probably there you might be able to find contacts to get them involved to sort of to help you actually make this be an issue within the Black community. I know that there is a relatively strong Chicano Studies program at the University of Minnesota, which again, they may not be dealing with that right now, or we're all, you know, but the fact is that they do know that there is a strong tradition of environmental justice. The movement began in New Mexico, actually, you know, and anyway, that's something you might check to try to, as a resource, to get people, you know, at least a knowledge build, and then, like say, students usually related to these groups are people who are, you know, trying to, yeah.
Hey there, my name is Brian Ward. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, or occupied Ho-Chunk land. First of all, thank you both so much for your comments, and I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, settler colonialism a little bit. I gave a talk on it earlier, so I apologize if people hear things repeated, but I think a couple things when we're talking about the environmental justice movement, because obviously it is extremely white, but I think we also need to understand it was actually much, much more white, like in the past. You know, there's been more of a dynamic around, at least talking about these issues of environmental racism, especially when it comes to indigenous sovereignty and people of color, like spaces. I know when I used to live in DC, we worked around Black communities that were facing pollution at much higher rates than the rest of the city. So I think like when we're thinking about the environmental movement, especially when we're talking about pipelines, there's like these two elements that I think are really key for us to think about. We always talk about the resistance to pipelines. So we talk about the resistance, and I think the first like kind of framework is like indigenous liberation, that it's treaty rights, using that as a legal framework is really important. It's also for us to, we need to make sure to understand is that 72% of indigenous people live in cities and suburban areas. They are not all on reservations. A lot of people think that. A lot of people still think that because we're not supposed to know anything about indigenous people because we live in a settler colonial country that was aimed at erasure. And that's been good. So what we've actually started to see with out of Standing Rock, out of Keystone XL, where there's the Cowboy Indian Alliance, you started seeing these kind of like multiracial movements start. But one of the things that we're seeing kind of shortcoming is organizing the labor movement. I know the German comrade kind of talked a little bit about that earlier, because we need to put forward as eco-socialists, what's the alternative? You know, because it is, if we're like just advocating for people's jobs to be, you know, gone, that's not good. I mean, we should advocate for their jobs to change, you know, to, you know, building a green economy. And so I think we need to think through this, because at the end of the day, if we can actually organize, and this is, you know, this is a big project, but we can actually organize within the people that are building pipelines, the people who are working in coal plants, to actually fight for their interest, which is should be to not be polluted themselves, that's actually power. That's
what
we can actually stop the actual system. And so I just want to say thank you so much for both of you coming, and yeah, we just need to have a decolonized mindset on this and actually think through our settler colonial history.
Awesome, thank you. Just for folks who just entered the room, first of all, if you want to get on stack, just throw up your hand. The stack is open, and we have seats up in the front. If people would like to sit down and you don't want to interrupt, please come on up. I want everyone to be comfortable. The next three comrades on stack, I have comrade with the long hair in the back row on this side. I have the comrade in the green shirt in the back row here, and I have the comrade in the black shirt and glasses over here. I had written down black shirt, glasses on the left. No one? Am I missing someone?
I'm way on the left.
Oh, I got you. I got you on the right over here. All right. Then my next one is going to be the comrade in the purple shirt, if you want to get in line. And you can go ahead.
Hello, you guys. I learned a lot in your talk. My name's Destiny. So like, first thing was, when you were talking, I'm just like, okay. So how am I going to tell people they need to go to Minnesota and get trained for this shit? I'm like, who am I going to get? And that's okay, but like the important thing is that if I send everybody to go get trained, like, what are they going to come back and do, right? Because they need to be involved. It's like I hear like something that you had said, I don't remember your name, our lovely black high school organizer. I'm so excited to see you. Okay, so you have been talking about like how white people really care about like trees and animals and shit, and I think that really like as opposed to organizing like for our lives, and I think that's like a really important like distinction. I started thinking about that because it's like when we think about, I was like, what environmental issues are there in North Carolina? And a lot of them are directly affecting the lives of people of color, like the spray fields there that will like spray hog waste across people's farms and houses. And it's like they aim the shit at like literal shit at like black people, because it's like, oh, their houses are worth nothing, and like, so people are like losing their property, and it's like the vanguard for the fight of that is the NAACP. That's a problem, right? That's not like a popular support movement behind that. But then it's also like all they do is legal struggles. And then I was also thinking, like, I was really like, okay, when we come back after we send people up to get trained. I was like, what, I realized that there was like a big coal ash spill in North Carolina, you might have heard about, and it's like, I don't even know about what the organizing was, but it's like I know, my family is from around there, like I have family from around there, and it's like the health problems that they had, right? It's like everybody who, like I know some people who lived at a house near that spill, and it's like one of my aunts like got like ovarian cancer, heart disease, and her kidneys failed, right, in the same year, right? And it's like, and another person living in the house, like dementia, like started like accelerating. It's like, these are side effects that are connected to like drinking water that would have the chemicals from a coal ash spill, but it's like no one really is engaging it because it's very poor, very rural people. I'm like, oh, well, if we were thinking about environmentalism for our lives as opposed to just the virtue of the environment, then we might be able to, but like we would have better ground to motivate people of color. Like it would be like a justice claim as opposed to just like, I think that's kind of based off the fact that white people have been moving the movement. So I guess like, how do we shift the movement towards like what is most relevant to our material conditions, right? That's what a question. And also I guess I have much statement with that. So thank you guys, y'all did fantastic.
Hello, y'all.
y'all. Steven here from the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, which is on occupied land of the Eastern Band of the Cherokee Indians. And I just would like to first say that this was I didn't actually know who was speaking before then, but you know, I don't especially care. This was phenomenal. And the fact that there are two high school students leading youths environmental strikes is like, you know, youth aren't the future, they're the now, you know, and that is phenomenal. And, you know, thank you for talking about environmental racism and especially, you know, thinking about like, you know, thinking, you know, I'm from the deep South, originally South Carolina, and just like on our coast and on the, you know, New Orleans, in the Gulf and on our coast, like really destitute people, you know, more than half of them probably people of color living in these areas. And while, you know, hurricanes and flooding and all of that, every year it's visibly getting worse. They're visibly getting more violent. They're visibly getting more more regular. And it's, you know, every year, and like houses are being destroyed. And then there's also a sector of like very wealthy people who have all, you know, their summer homes, and they're being much more better preserved, and they're like, you know, they got insured and everything, and you know, they're, regardless of what happens, they're fine. But like the people who actually live there are getting the brunt of, like, you know, climate change is like the effects of climate change are happening now. But one of the things, not to go like completely, you know, I'm very articulate. No, but one of the things I was thinking, like, with these movements being led so predominantly by like white middle class people, you know, thinking that like in America it might be kind of like a novelty that you might not really think about this, but like eco-fascism, like far right, like white identitarian types, you know, like becoming environmentalists, and I think that's like a real issue with like movements, you know, having.
Can we begin to wrap up?
Of course, and I'm just thinking, like, you know, Hitler was an environmentalist, you know, so it's like, with our movements being so quiet, I think, and without having a socialist backing, an intersectional backing, an anti-racist backing, it's really at threat of being twisted and becoming like eco-fascist. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Amelia. I'm an organizer with Rising Tide Chicago, who's worked really closely with some folks in Minnesota. And I'm also a writer in Chicago. Thank you both so much for being here and offering all of your wisdom. I have sort of two questions that are more about the youth. And I just would be curious, you sort of talked about, right, like the ways of sort of like decentering whiteness in climate and environmental spaces. And I think maybe to me, I'm also thinking about like the ways that these NGOs also have very specific like processes of doing that work. And so it's like also about like who's in the room and at the table, but also like how we do this, right? And like how we're talking, how power is structured. So, you know, even just like looking at this room, right? And how it's like very much like, you know, power at the front, and like, sure, we have this microphone that's shared, but like, you know, how like often like indigenous spaces will use like circles or something. But so my question is sort of like, I'd be curious to hear more about how like the youth climate strikes are actually like organized, like actually like, what are the sort of like, how is it facilitated, and sort of like how, what are ways that those spaces are maybe like decolonized or, you know, centering like POC folks. And then maybe if there's like any, sorry, I'm sort of rambling now, but I guess sort of thinking about like how we can think about like an intra-divestment movement of like how do we divest from those like bigger NGOs and like actually give money to like the local like POC run organizations. So yeah, I guess that's sort of my question. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ivy. I'm here with XR Chicago, and we're a pretty new group. So XR, Extinction Rebellion in the U.S. started this winter, and we're trying to differentiate ourselves from the U.K. in that, so XR has the official demands, which is about recognizing climate emergency and the need to completely stop burning fossil fuels. But in the United States, we have a focus on intersectionality. We have a focus on environmental justice that we, and we call that our fourth demand. And it's the most, it's the one that causes the most strife, the most discussion. But everyone agrees it's the most important. And it's what they don't have in Europe. They don't have that official part of the discussion. And so we're trying to build a new road. Here in Chicago, we want to get involved in, so Dakota Access Pipeline was built and put in service. And what came out recently was they want to double capacity of the pipeline by adding pumping stations to force twice as much oil through the same pipe. So that will increase the pressure, increase the likelihood of spills. And so Dakota Access is, Standing Rock isn't over, Dakota Access isn't over. We are very interested in gaining solidarity with groups that are on the front lines in Illinois, on the front lines in Iowa. And much of this information is not yet publicly accessible. We're very interested, I'm very interested in reaching out to people to work together on learning and dialogue and next steps in action. Because we want to stop, they want to make Dakota Access Pipeline go from 550,000 barrels per day to 1.1 million barrels per day, which is doubling.
You can begin to wrap up.
And my the other point that I wanted to make is the Big Greens have heard us. The Big Green groups, I've seen a lot more Sierra Club getting involved in police brutality protests. I've seen Greenpeace getting involved in immigrants' rights rallies. And these groups are very interested in the work that we as socialists have always been there talking about intersectionality. These Big Green groups are looking for more intersectionality, more interfacing with the communities that are at risk. And so is XR, and I want to know more ideas on that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, to make sure our panelists have time to get to all these great questions, I'll take one more person and then we are gonna close stack. I do have you, I'm gonna ask if folks can keep it to 2 minutes just to make sure we get someone. Next up on stack, first person is gonna be the comrade in the blue on the glasses in the aisle. You are after them. And then the comrade in the black and white in the glasses right there.
My name is Mark. I'm from the Hudson Valley, part of a Rockland coalition to end the new Jim Crow, which was a group against mass incarceration and injustice. Reason I'm part of that group is because I wanted to lie with the Ramapo Lenape Nation, who are criminalized in all their battles. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about those struggles. There is a place called Split Rock, Sweetwater, which is essentially Standing Rock East. They have been involved in uniting around pipeline struggles in the Hudson Valley, for example. I'll just give one example for shortness of time. There is a pipeline being built right near Indian Plant Nuclear Plant, about 100 yards away, on three earthquake faults. And this is being done right now, and the Ramapo Lenape Nation organized demonstrations to fight it. For example, to take over the Bear Mountain Bridge and to go over and to make, you know, notice of this. Ringwood, New Jersey is one of the three places that the Ramapo live. Every single person is sick in this town who are Ramapo because of the Ford Foundation, which created a Superfund site, which has never been cleaned up. Everybody's sick. So I just wanted to make you aware of this struggle and to understand that these struggles are going on in many, many places we don't know about. We should have some sort of integrated, you know, media that tells us about all the different struggles that are taking place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ellie. She, her pronouns. I'm from Athens, Ohio, part of the Athens Revolutionary Socialists. I guess I want to amplify part of what you were saying, Iskra, about having a global perspective. Within this country, it's true that poor people, black people, people of color, and the most marginalized among us are hit first and worst, but that is even magnified more on a global scale. Any given week, you can Google, and there are heat waves, monsoons, flooding, killing hundreds and thousands of people around the world just already. Like, the end of the world is already here for far too many people. So I think that our movement needs to be rooted in anti-imperialism and open borders. I think that that should be one of the central demands of the environmental justice movement. I also think that we need to pay particular attention. The U.S. is the case of Puerto Rico, which is a U.S. colony, and there are 5,000 people killed in Hurricane Maria, and U.S. colonialism and imperialism is like doubly and triply over responsible for those deaths. I mean, the U.S. ruling class is what is one of the major driving forces in the world behind climate change, the cause of the hurricane, and so many, even if there wasn't that hurricane happened anyway, so many of those deaths could have been prevented if it weren't for the utterly cruel and sick and undemocratic U.S. colonial rule in Puerto Rico. So I think that, our, you know, for the Bernie folks in the room, I think that that is a very major weakness of the social democratic movement right now. It's a weakness of Bernie himself and many of his supporters. I also think that there is no such thing as a green economy under capitalism, and that we really need to turn the world upside down to have any chance of survival.
So weird, like facing, I've got my back to some people, I don't know what to do, but anyway, Ellie, I really liked a lot of what Ellie said, and I wanted to, I don't know, like add a piece to this discussion about, my name's Lee, I'm from New York, add to the discussion about like jobs versus environment and so on. And one thing that I know more about kind of pipeline resistance and extraction in Africa, and I think that what's the question around jobs and the environment is, it's not completely different, but part of what it is that people, that first of all, the jobs on things like pipelines and mining and so on are more transitory, they're more what's the word? Not informal, but like semi-formal economy. And so you've got like people who come from the communities that are most polluted, who then are also working on things like the mines and the pipelines. So for people like in from the towns and the creeks and the Niger River Delta are also the ones that are kind of brought in to do stints on, you know, the oil platforms or what have you and so on. And or if people know, I spoke at the meeting on the on extraction yesterday, I talked about Marikana. People know it's a very, in South Africa, 34 platinum miners were killed because they went on strike. And the Marikana workers were from a very incredibly poor area in the north part of South Africa, very marginalized, and the conditions, they were on strike because the conditions in the platinum mines were so horrific. They had no gear, and again, this is
begin to wrap up.
Oh, okay. Anyway, that because of the way that colonialism and multinationals have now are operating, that all the deregulation is gone, all of the sort of, and it's, so it's what's happened, the deregulation on the job is very intertwined with what's happened with the deregulation of the environment. So I just kind of wanted to like fuse those two together, and just finally to say that I'm really, really excited about the idea of building like international links and solidarity between folks and what I've heard from the Red Nation, and I'd love to just talk with all of you more about that project.
Awesome. So we have on stack the comrade in the black and the beard on the right over here. Yes. We have the comrade in the red up front. Yes. And the comrade in the tan up front.
Thank you. My name's Howie Hawkins. I'm from Syracuse, New York. I'm in the Green Party, and they got me seeking the Green nomination for president. And I've been working on these issues. The reason I raised my hand was I heard the idea that these people won't get jobs in the unions is bullshit. And I've been fighting that idea for 45 years. I was one of the people to help organize the clamshell lines, occupy the Seabrook nuclear power plant site. And the industry always posed it as jobs versus the environment. We had a group back then, Environmentalists for Full Employment. And then we got involved with the oil, chemical, and atomic workers. They're in the dirtiest industries, and they were trying to figure out how to get out of them because their families were getting poisoned, their communities were getting poisoned. And they came up with, then they called it the Superfund for Workers, but now it's called the Just Transition. So we've had these programs. We've had legislation for Congress for the right to a job. You wouldn't go to the unemployment office, you'd go to the employment office and say, I want my job. And so we cannot let anybody say it's job versus the environment. We're the ones creating the jobs. I was the first person to run on a Green New Deal in 2010, running for governor of New York. And we're coming out of the Great Recession. The issue then was, how do we get the economy going again? We led with the Bill of Rights, job guarantee, guaranteed income, raise the minimum wage, and so forth. And 100% clean energy by 2020. That's what the science said back then. It's still the same science, and we're really late on this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So, begin to wrap up.
Okay. I say we got to put forward four demands. The job guarantee, that's a good thing on the Green New Deal that they put into Congress, but the Democratic leadership defeated. The bad thing is not in there is a ban on fracking and all new fossil fuel infrastructure. That's why we're fighting these pipelines. And we're actually beating them, at least in New York where I am. Eco-socialism, we got to socialize energy. The Koch brothers, Exxon, and Enbridge are not going to take their fossil fuel earnings and reinvest them in renewables. So we need to take them over and have a public energy system. And finally, the resource, we got to demilitarize. That's got to be part of the Green New Deal. It's been for the Green Party all along. These Democrats are not talking about that. So let's bring that demand forward, too.
Thank you.
Dan from Minneapolis, he, him. I think, you know, part of the reason that we, I don't know how to do this, sorry. Part of the reason that I think, you know, there is this argument that there are jobs and the economy is contrasted with the ability to fight climate change is that most, at least for unions, for certain, definitely even the environmental movement for many years beforehand, it's not simply that it's just a white movement, which is completely true, but it's also dominated by liberal politics that doesn't have class politics that injects this idea that it rejects the idea that there's a scarcity of resources to address the climate. There isn't a scarcity of resources. What there is scarcity of will to do this. And I think that we need to have class politics that challenge that challenges the that's a major obstacle to creating green jobs. We need class politics that says that it aids in the sense that one, we see we're gonna have this Green New Deal, we're gonna propose it. The question is, how is it going to be paid for? And if we don't see the agents of change as a multiracial working class that can not only fight on the front lines to stop the pipeline, that can not only advocate policies that are going to create new Green New Deal, but it's actually going to provide the engine that's going to fuel movements that are going to demand this of pressure on the people that get in there. So we can get Howie in there, we can get Bernie in there. But where's the pressure going to come from? And I think that's the key thing. The unions that are against this kind of stuff are not usually the ones that are involved in the actual production process. And those unions are really needed to be convinced that there is potential for them to have jobs. It's just not the kind of jobs that are going to destroy the environment. They need to feel that. They need to be confident about that. And class politics is going to be a big piece of convincing them that that's possible.
Hi, my name's Brandon. I go by him pronouns. I'm in Minneapolis and unceded Dakota Territory. I just want to thank you both so much for speaking today, and especially Israel. There's so much to think about, and your leadership is so inspiring. I really liked the way that you phrased the front lines in urban centers, and I think that for me, us from the East Coast, and I romanticized Standing Rock, and that was definitely a radicalizing moment for me, but romanticizing what the front line is, without thinking about there's frontline people in my community, when you talk about asthma and lead. So one question is, where are some frontline solidarity between, urban frontlines and rural frontlines, in Minnesota? Where is the solidarity between, frontlines of pipeline resistance and, communities of color near refineries in Houston, Detroit, and that kind of stuff? And also, I think, the way I've been thinking about this too is there's frontline, when you think about concentration camps on the border, realizing that there's also frontlines to that struggle of carceral capitalism and mass incarceration in our communities, and there's jails in all of our communities that we can be resisting and fighting. And on the carceral capitalism point, I think that with line three, an important component of this is realizing that a lot of these workers and jobs in man camps around fossil fuel infrastructure fuels, you know, extractivism that also leads to the murdered and missing indigenous women and sexual violence. And
if you could begin to wrap up.
The last question I wanted to ask is, you know, just kind of a perspective of direct action from Cliff and sort of like the frontline resistance and youth climate strikes. And what do you think some connections are in solidarity and like those tactics, and how can those work towards each other in a common cause of the climate justice movement? Thank you.
All right, so next on stack, I have the comrade in the front in the white and the comrade in the blue. I believe that's everyone I had on stack. Was there anyone who raised their hand that I'm not getting to?
I'd like to go.
Okay, that'll be our last person then. If y'all, we're gonna wrap it up with this, 2 minutes each, thanks.
So my name's Ted, I'm from Oakland, California, and I wanted to give a quick shout out to Labor Network for Sustainability, which had a conference with 250 unionists in Chicago last weekend. And you know, there are a lot of people within the union movement who are trying to struggle to get the union movement involved and to get the union movement involved in a justice plan and to play a positive role in conceiving of the Green New Deal as a climate justice, environmental justice, anti-racist program with a class perspective. And so one of the things that we learned in NoCoal in Oakland was also that, you know, it's really important to reach out into the community and understand that there are forces in motion, there are people in motion beyond whatever your socialist sect that you belong to may be acquainted with, and that there, in our community, a group formed during the struggle to stop a coal terminal from being built in Oakland, called Youth Versus Apocalypse, which was led by Black, Brown, Asian, and other young people, and you know, is an autonomous organization. And I think that you know we need to recognize organizations like that that are going to form spontaneously and recognize that they bring wisdom to the picture that even we as maybe socialists with 50 years in the socialist movement don't have.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Anna. I'm from Wisconsin, but I live here now. I'm actually in the midst of making a documentary about climate justice, and I'm trying to focus on this like divide between, not divide, but like the possible linkages you can make between the urban spaces and the rural spaces, focusing on Detroit and then indigenous people from North America and South America. Well, if anyone's interested in diving further into this discourse, I went to a conference actually here called New Horizons, and it was about diversity and inclusion in the conservation movement. And it was led by this woman named Dorsetta Taylor, who is a literal god, and she's like creating like new vistas in the discourse for kind of talking about climate justice, and maybe justice is the heavier term in that phrase. And I guess, I don't know, a lot of it kind of in making this documentary, I'm thinking about these things as maybe opportunities, and maybe that's kind of a way to approach these things as like climate justice, the climate catastrophe is, you know, maybe this is like a little bit dismal to say, but like an opportunity for us to reckon with these inequalities that have always existed. And so it's gonna, to save all of humanity is gonna require a paradigm shift, but it could be a way of reformulating, recombinating how we relate to one another on a very fundamental level. So it could be an opportunity. One last thing I was gonna say, there's no sustainability without justice. So it on a really literal level, so yeah.
Hi. I know both of you, and I love you guys, but, by the way, my name is Rose. Hamatakiapi. Rose Obumakiapi Santi Hamataha. And even though I both know you, and I don't know you, but.
Nice to meet you.
it was hard for me to walk in here and not see an indigenous person up here speaking about decolonization, pipeline resistance, and even climate change. All three things that impact indigenous peoples, like first and foremost in this country and globally. And you know, I didn't get to hear everything you guys said because I got here late. But you know, things like the Green New Deal, things like labor movements, things like all these things that people came up and talked about are not things that are going to save us. You know, the main thing that we need to be focusing on, especially with all these Washichus in the room, which means white people in the cult, the language, you know, we need to be giving this land back to indigenous peoples. We need to be giving our land back and our resources and our money to indigenous peoples, because without, you know, we're on stolen land, you know, and being on stolen land, we're not going to have justice. We're not going to have climate justice on stolen land, which is the reason why this climate crisis is happening, right? Because white people came here, white people came to all these countries and colonized them. And we're not just going to reverse that with the same system that caused it, you know? So we need to be looking at other ways to do so. And, you know, I think white people and even other non-indigenous peoples need to be standing back and giving, you know, the stage to indigenous peoples, you know, paying them money to come to things like this, even paying indigenous kids to come to things like this that cost hundreds of dollars to get into. And yeah, I mean, I think all of you guys need to think about that, need to think about indigenous peoples that, you know, they don't have the access to come to things like this, don't have the access to even speak at things like this, whose voices are being, you know, not heard. Because there's social justice warriors that want to take the mic all the time. I'm not saying that you guys want to do that, but there are people whose egos get the best of them. And, you know, we need to stop that from happening, because there's kids on reservations, kids on cities, you know, indigenous kids who are fighting this just as hard as anybody, harder than anybody. You know, I've been fighting this pipelines in general since I was 15 years old. You know, like, you can't talk about decolonization if you're not indigenous, because you don't know what that means. You know, you don't know what it feels like to be in a ceremony and, you know, taste that water from, you know, it's just, it really disappoints me. And I would like to see everybody here do better in your communities, you know, with your indigenous peoples, not just, you know, talking about what land you are, who stolen land you are, and thinking that you're such a great person because you know who stolen land you're on. What are you doing for them, actually? What are you doing? Are you giving your money to them? Whose land are you on? Think about that.
I want to speak directly to what Rose just said for a moment. So, to the credit of the people who were trying to organize this, the original panel was three indigenous leaders who were fighting Line 3. And then we didn't get the program or the title changed in the program in time for the program to be printed, but we were like, okay, it's not going to be about decolonization and pipelines anymore, because the other two, Jessica and Misty, who were in the program, both weren't able to make it, but very last minute. And so we're like, well, let's just do one on climate. But what I should have done is ask Rose to speak about this, and it did not occur to me. I'm sorry. That's totally me fucking up, so I'm sorry about that. So I want to own up to that. Totally my fuck up. I am really sorry. So, yeah.
Right, even I, you know, have stepped down from speaking because I want to let other indigenous people speak. You know, I don't always want to be the indigenous person that's speaking. There's billions of other indigenous peoples that are impacted by this.
Right.
And even though, yeah, I'm a great speaker and I might have even got asked to do this, but there are other people out there that also should have been given the chance to do this as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this, you know, isn't on you guys. You guys probably have no power over this, but this happens at other conferences, at other things that happen everywhere in your communities. So, you know, if we're gonna talk about the youth, we're gonna talk about the climate strikes, are there any indigenous kids in there? There's probably like three people of color in there. And do they have any power in that movement? You know, are they the ones that are leading the charge? You know, I don't think so. And so we all need to do better. You know, we all need to go back to our Sierra Clubs, our 350s, and, you know, talk to them about this, because this is happening everywhere. You know, I've been to different states, different countries, and it's the same. And, you know, it's the people in this room that aren't speaking up. You guys need to. So if you guys really want to, you know, be socialists, be climate justice warriors, be, you know, indigenous allies. So
yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I think it's a really powerful and important note to end the discussion part on. So we have about 4 minutes each for our panelists to respond as best they can to a lot of the great ideas that were put forward there. Do would you like to start, Cliff, or how do we want to?
I just really want to clarify. I feel like me up here talking about USU Climate Strike makes it seem like it's perfect or that we have everyone. We really don't. It's literally an active problem and an active thing that everybody needs to work towards. But the thing about it is that we understand that, and we're understanding that we need to actively fight against these ideas of whiteness. And no, we don't have any indigenous people, and that is an active problem and the active thing that we need to obviously keep working towards. And you see me, you know, like a black individual part of this climate movement, and you're like, oh, like, you know, something's changing, or like, you see this difference, but in reality there isn't. And these people, they exist, you know, indigenous people, you know, black and brown people actively doing this fight, and they're out there. They're not like visibly there because of these NGOs, because of these people, you know, people with privilege, including myself, that have the ability to do these things. And I think that, you know, it's an obvious thing that we obviously need to all work against. And I think, you know, me talking probably like gave this idea that everything is so nice and so perfect, but if it was, then like, there probably wouldn't be any white people part of the USU Climate Strike, but that's not realistic because we're so actively towards working towards these things. And somebody asked a question about how to get the, you know, indigenous people, black and brown people involved in these movements, and it's like, you know, it's not that difficult to talk to people, go to these communities and have conversations, not obviously like bringing, you know, like, clipboards and white people to like this like very you know, like diverse community, but more like having conversations with them, because you know, people aren't aliens and it's not that hard to, you know, have a conversation. And while groups like Greenpeace and Sierra Club might be doing the work, they don't need to be doing that work. You know, giving it to, you know, black, brown, indigenous people to do that work is 10 times better and more effective. And if you want to be an ally, you know, realizing you need to step back. And again, somebody mentioned, you know, this room, and, you know, obviously walking into this room, it was a little weird for me because I didn't realize, like, people were, I don't know, this panel was going to end up happening, and I didn't really know what to talk about. But, like, you know, when I first came to this conference, I walked into a room filled with white people, and, you know, it kind of gives me this bad idea of, like, socialism and, like, this idea of, like, you know, leftists and leading some revolution when the revolution doesn't look anything like, you know, where, you know, in my city where I'm from. And it's kind of disheartening to see, and it's like talking about these revolutions, talking about these movements, it's like, you know, these things cost so much money, and they're so inaccessible, not even just young people, but also to other people who don't have the privilege to come in these spaces. And I think it's important to realize that we get to talk about things like jobs and like Green New Deal and like revolution and like running for president, etc., but like people in like communities that they don't get to hear these things, they don't understand what's going on because nobody's talking to them. You know, nobody is giving them the platform to speak. And so thank you, Rose, for giving your spiel. I think that was super important for everybody to hear, especially me. And realizing no group's perfect, and we're actively, you know, working towards that. And obviously, you know, it isn't a white-dominated space. Maybe Minnesota, working on that. But, you know, it's important to realize, like, everybody needs to do, like, fix everything they're doing, because it's never going to be perfect unless we all realize that there's a missing and gaping hole within these movements. How much time do I have left?
30 seconds.
Cool. Yeah, and I think this whole conversation about jobs and taking away jobs is also very flawed, because, you know, our lives are on the line and people are actively dying as we speak. People are actually suffering, and it's like there is a way to like do this transition where people are going to have better jobs. And if we have this idea of like, oh no, like coal companies are going to be losing money, then like we're never going to be making that change that we need, and we can do it in a way that helps people who are in these low income jobs. And I think we need to realize changing our spaces first before we even think about the idea of fixing climate change.
So I feel like the most important thing is exactly what Rose was saying, and there again, totally want to own up that I should have thought, oh, I should invite Rose to speak on this panel. And at the last, there was cancellations, right? And that's why I was like, oh, well, we're going to miss a panel on climate, you know, strategy and stuff. And I was like, oh, I'll ask Isra because I know Isra's coming to talk about climate strike stuff, but I really should have thought of Rose. So I just want to own up to that again. I want to shout out really quick that Rose and Isra and myself and a bunch of other really badass youth of color in this room are all part of one organization called Young People's Action Coalition. And we're in Minneapolis and St. Paul doing high school student organizing around social and environmental justice stuff. You should give us your money because all of our youth leaders and our core teams of youth get stipends weekly because that's, we believe in, you know, it's not like a living wage or something for the work that people actually do, but we do believe that like that's where we need to put our resources. So if you want to donate to Young People's Action Coalition, we have 15 people here today from Minneapolis and St. Paul from YPAC, so please do that. Yeah, that's that. I feel like those are the most important things. I guess since I have a minute, I'll just kind of touch on the labor question since it seems like a pertinent one that, you know, I'm a union organizer, so I can talk about that at least a little bit for a second. And there's a lot of factors to it, right? And I feel like one of the factors is that our strategy is different within different unions, right? Unions are not a monolith, and they're not a monolith in terms of how they relate to the fossil fuel industry and how they relate to ending the fossil fuel industry. The unions that do pipelines in particular are LIUNA, Teamsters, National Pipeline, International Union of Operating Engineers, and the like plumbing and pipe fitters, basically. Are there leftists in there? I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. I don't think so. Should we be building? Your team, sir. Yeah, exactly.
There's a difference between the workers and officers and staff.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and there's like great rank and file Teamster caucuses, right? But are they in the national pipeline chunk of Teamsters, right? Like, so that's a whole different orientation than teachers and service workers, you know, building a caucus around climate, things like that to push policy and, you know, things like that, right? So like, there's just different worlds of this. And I would throw in again, I just want to shout out if you want to come do very concrete solidarity against Line 3 with leadership from Native folks in northern Minnesota, please come sign up on here at the end of this thing, and we'll just send you an email about it is all we'll be doing with that. I feel like there was one more thing related to that. The crisis of right now, right, is like what deserves to happen is to turn the world upside down, like somebody said, and, you know, destroy all this infrastructure and all these things that are terrible and stop it right now. And the trick is we don't have the power to do that. We are not strong enough. Don't kid ourselves. We're tiny. The left is miniature. And we are not at a place where we can lead like the masses to do that, right? The masses are not radicalized and militant and organized. So we have to deal with the contradiction of needing to deal with this right now and having to take the long, slow, no shortcuts path of organizing the working class and like oppressed people against this, you know, death machine. So like, that's the contradiction we have to eat. And I don't really have a good way of like, what do we do about that beyond do the organizing and do the work and eat the contradictions as they come. But like, you know, I'd love to overthrow the whole damn thing tomorrow too, but like, we're not there, we don't have the strength. And if you want to learn how to do that, you should come to an action camp. Because what do? We talk about strategy and power and building a base and leveraging that power. Like, it's skills. It's not just knowing that capitalism sucks and the pipelines suck. It's the actual skill to be able to do something about it. And it's hard skills that you can actually learn. So please come to camp. It's really fun. I think that is all. Thanks.
All right, let's have a round for Cliff and Isra, both filling in at the last minute for a great discussion. And give yourselves a round of applause. This was a great discussion, great debate. Especially like to thank Rose for her commentary at the end. Enjoy the closing of Socialism 2019.
Come sign up for camp.
And come sign up at the front. Come give money to your local Black, Brown, and Native organizers.
I got some Gary Farmers in Montgomery.
I just want to say thank you for all your work. I'm a teacher.
Frog place on the river?
I'm wondering what inspired you to get involved with First Wives.
Yeah, I mean, if that works for you, I figured we could do it before the
I'll just send an email because I'm going to meet someone else.
Yeah, no problem.
About social change, I just ended up joining and then learning. But I would say like education, a lot of kids don't.